One of her neighbours recognised her from the painting. Dante frowned over the quiet streets. Dollondon was in better shape than Kling, at least. For all the earlier riots, there was little sign of war. Two square blocks of row houses were torched, shattered windows here and there, anti-human graffiti on the sides of the chattelry office. The corners of homes showed strange sigils Dante assumed were the urban equivalent of wild sign. There were living Noran, too, mostly female and young. They walked the streets uneasily, double-taking as they saw two humans running down the cobbles. Most relaxed when they saw the colors of Narashtovik, others fled down alleys and slammed doors. Blaze stopped in front of a shack on the north fringe of town. Lyra waited inside a room furnished with a cot and a chair and a table with a scattering of pencils. Drawings covered the walls, clearly childish, with shaky lines and distorted proportions of faces and dogs. Yet parts showed a clear sophistication, too, with swoops and fine details that suggested the girl had already found her Nulla. "What now?" Dante said, sure he was missing something. Blaze pointed at the floor. "Do your thing."
"My thing?"
"With the blood."
"You'll have to be more specific."
Blaze sighed in frustration and knelt, tapping the ground beside crusty red spots that blended into the dirt floor.
"The thing where you follow the blood to the person.
The neighbor said she was dragged off by soldiers. We have to help her." Dante crouched down beside the dried droplets.
"How do you know it's hers?"
"Who else would it belong to?"
"Her brother? One of the soldiers? Her very unlucky cat?"
"What does it matter if it's a soldier's? Then we'll find him and break his arms until he tells us where she is."
Dante nodded absently, drawing the nether from the corners of the room. It came readily, smelling blood.
"What if she's across the river? There must be hundreds of captives over there."
Blazer's brow crinkled.
"And if I'd made a promise to her hundreds of granddads, I'd be tracking them down, too. I made a pledge to Banning. If we don't keep our pledges, what separates us from the skunks?"
Dante let the nether flow to the dried blood, and asked it where it could find more of that blood. A dull pressure sprouted in his head. It pointed west, of course. "Why are you so ready to risk your life to rescue her from the terrible fate of scrubbing the floors of some barracks?"
"She's a 13-year-old girl!" Blaze exploded. He hooked his fingers into Dante's hair, claw-like, and rattled his head back and forth. "That's why they took her! She's not scrubbing any fucking floors!"
Dante waited for Blaze to release his hair. He sat down and calmed his breathing.
"She's alive. Across the river. Just point me in the right direction."
He glanced at Lyra.
"You coming?"
She nodded once.
"If it's important to you, it's important to me."
Dante cocked his head at her.
"What about your pledge to protect me? You've got 2,000 Noran clansmen camped out in town. If they can't protect you, I don't know what good I'd be."
He smiled with half his mouth, and pointed in the direction of the pressure in his head. Blaze strode out the door, Lyra behind him. Dante followed into the warm afternoon sun.
"How exactly are you going to cross the river?"
"What do you care?"
Blaze said over his shoulder.
"Are you taking a boat?
I thought I'd just run myself at the water real hard and try to skip myself across."
"Then either go at night or go far downstream first. They'll be watching the river like hawks. Hawks who hate people who tried to cross the river in boats."
Blaze tipped his head back at the sky. "It's hours till nightfall. Tell me if she changes location before we go."
"Of course," Dante said.
"I'll be there, at the oars with you."
"Oh.
You thought I was staying here?"
"I must have been tricked by your resistance to every single aspect of my plan." Well, I do think it's moronic, Dante said, but in my experience, that's when we do our best work. Blaze grinned. As they waited for the sun to slide behind the trees, Dante checked on Cora's direction several times, but if her location had changed, it was too minor to make out. They took the rowboat shortly after nightfall. Scattered torches flickered across the western half of the city. After rowing hard to the river's middle, they slowed to lessen the splashing, pulled a foot downstream by the current for every foot they pulled themselves closer to land. 200 yards from shore, Dante cast a cloak of shadows over the boat, just thin enough to see through. The hull ground against the smooth pebbles of the bank. While Dante watched the dark houses, Blaze and Lyra hauled the boat halfway from the water. The grinding wood sounded loud enough to shake Dante's teeth loose. The current had dragged them more than a mile north of the girl. They'd dressed in dark clothes, non-uniformed, and slipped down the streets at a light jog. Oval shutters hid whatever was behind them. Candlelight slipped through the cracks of a few, but most were dark, abandoned as the red shirts retreated and the Norran army arrived just across the waters. Boot steps scraped in rhythm around the corner. Dante ducked into the lee of a high-steepled church encrusted with Narashtavik-style gargoyles. Lyra and Blaze pressed in beside him. 3 soldiers scuffed down the street, clubs in hands, swords at their belts, their voices carried on the calm, cool air. When the soldiers' footsteps faded, Dante cut through a neighborhood of slanted shacks and hungry-eyed dogs that barked for blocks after they'd departed. He skirted a plaza where a single inn remained open, low talk filtering from its shuttered windows. 3 stalls had actually been abandoned. Scraps of cabbage and bread lay sopping on the cobblestones. The pressure in Dante's head grew each minute, drawing them closer to whoever's blood had been spilled upon the shack's dirt floor. If they were lucky, and Cora too, it would be hers. The pressure spiked to the point of pain. Dante stopped in the shadow of the row house and turned in a slow circle until that almost pain was aligned like a third eye in the center of his forehead. He pointed across the street to another row house on the corner of a wide and empty intersection. If she's here, she's in there. Blaze showed his teeth in something that wasn't a grin. Let's go. Hang on, Dante said. See anything small and dead? Lyra pointed to a lantern on the side of the row house. A moth fluttered above the dim light. How about small and living? Dante knocked it down with the flick of Netha and delved into its eyes. His stomach lurched. Its flight was slower yet more erratic than a fly's, dropping suddenly before boosting itself back to its prior height. He directed it towards a crack in the shutters. It banged into the wall 4 times before slipping through, leaving Dante with an instant headache that could have been the result of the Netherial link or simply out of sympathy. Inside, diffuse lamplight showed a man in a chair with a blackly gleaming bottle tucked into the crook of his elbow. The man swung his head to stare straight into Dante's eyes. A note of panic rose in Dante's gut, but he was watching the moth. Nothing more. Dante spun the moth into a cramped kitchen, and then up the stairs into a dingy room lit by candles, and whatever moonlight fell through the open windows. 2 men in red cloaks murmured to each other across a table. Another slept fitfully on a bed of blankets and clothes. Up the next set of stairs, a tight hallway showed 4 doors, all closed. Dante let the moth fall into death, and waited for his head to start spinning. 1 soldier on the ground floor. 3 more on the second. I don't know what's on the third. Cora, Blaze said. Whoever's blood we're following is on the 3rd floor. I couldn't squeeze my moth under the doors. Whatever that means, it sounds disgusting. So, what, bust down the door and stab everything in sight? Dante shook his head. I've got something subtler. Watch my back. He opened a cut on his arm and sneaked across the street to press his eye to the crack in the shutters. The man with the bottle slipped his hand in his pocket, fumbled with his crotch, and glanced upstairs. Unwilling to risk a lesser wound that might give the man time to cry out, Dante called forth the nether, shaped it into a wicked blade, and slung it through the man's neck. His head tumbled to the ground. The body stayed tucked in his elbow. Blood jetted from his neck. On the floor, the head blinked, jaw tensing. Dante tried the door and found it bolted.
What's the hold-up? Blaze whispered. Forget where your foot goes. The answer is through the door. Wait.
Dante recalled the nether to his hands and sent it flowing into the headless body. Its limbs shivered. It reached for the bottle, quivering, and set it on the floor with a soft thunk. It stood and stumbled to the door to claw at the lock. Blaze whipped out his swords. Dante held up his palm.
It's all right.
The body grabbed the bolt, snicked it open, and stepped back. Dante swung open the door. The headless automaton stood perfectly still beside the blood coursing down its neatly bisected neck. Blaze choked, swallowing down a scream.
What's the matter with you?
I don't like getting slaughtered by hordes of soldiers.
Dante jerked his chin at the stairs at the back of the room.
The others are up there.
Blaze shuddered. His feet creaked on the floorboards. He eased up the stairway like a stalking ghost. Dante followed, Lyra right behind. At the landing, a tight corner concealed them from the room beyond. Blaze paused there, blades pointed down, and charged. The two men at the table bolted upright, shouting. Dante knocked one back down with a spike of nether straight through the heart. Blaze hacked down the raised arm of the second man and stabbed him through the throat. The sleeping man woke without a word and leapt from his pile of clothes. He backpedaled toward the window. With her free hand, Lyra grabbed his flapping cloak and swept out his legs with a crescent-shaped kick. She drove her sword into him as he fell, pinning him to the floor. Three of the upstairs rooms were empty. They found her in the fourth, lying on a scratchy straw mattress. She wore nothing but bruises.
Cora, Blaze said.
She blinked at him, blanket pulled to her chin, eyes as bright as stars. The Norrin girl was shorter than Dante, but the lankiness of her limbs belied the fact that wouldn't last. Blaze beckoned her forward.
We're friends of your granddad's. You need to come with us.
She glanced at the floor, as if she could see through it. Then, uncurled and stood, blanket pulled tight around her bony shoulders. Lyra's gaze dropped to her bare and black-soled feet.
Go down and watch the door, Blaze, Dante said. I'm going to get her some boots.
He descended to the second floor while Blaze continued downstairs. He wrenched the boots off one of the bodies and brought them back up to the girl, who sat and mechanically laced them up. Her white shin stuck from the tops of the boots, like broken wishbones. She looked up at Dante with eyes like forgotten silver. Blaze led the way back to the boat. They heard no horns, or bells, or cries. The city was dark, silent, as if holding its breath. Dante climbed into the boat and offered Cora his hand. Blaze waded into the river to push them off, then rolled over the side of the boat. Their paddles stirred the black waters. They reached the eastern shore without incident. At the outskirts of the army's camp, Blaze found an empty home and led the girl inside. He and Dante filled a basin with water from the well and brought it to Lyra, then closed the front door and walked into the street. Blaze booted a pebble down the cobbles.
Thanks.
Of course.
They deserve to die. Dante nodded absently.
She looks okay. Just quiet.
I'll show her the painting tomorrow, Blaze said. You should be there, too. Dante didn't think he'd be able to sleep, but he was wrong. Sleep always found a way. Morn and the Nine Pines arrived in Dolendun at noon. The clan had hunted down the soldiers who'd massacred the village and slaughtered the Redshirts in the night. Morn relayed this news with no joy. His voice held an implacable justice, as if the vengeance meted out on the soldiers hadn't been caused by him, but through the unstoppable clockwork of the cosmos. Dante had thought it more than strange the Nine Pines had been so swift to appoint him as their new chieftain, but their decision couldn't have been better. Blaze found Dante in the square and brought him back to the abandoned home. By daylight, Cora looked less pale and bedraggled. Lyra had combed the tangles from the girl's dark hair. As Dante and Blaze came into the house, she didn't say a word, merely followed Dante with her star-bright eyes. Blaze untucked the painting from under his arm and presented it to her. Cora leaned forward, like a leery terrier approaching a stranger.
"Grandpa," she said.
"That's right," Blaze said. "He asked us to give this to you. He said..."
Cora picked up the stretched canvas, carried it into her room, and quietly closed her door. Blaze smiled in frustration.
"Well, that's one way to respond to your dying granddad's last gesture."
Lyra stared him down.
"It's the first word she's said."
"I'm not complaining. I'm commenting. That was weird. Because it was.
Given what she's been through..."
Blaze held out his palms.
"I'm not complaining."
Dante escaped to let them work through their disagreement for themselves. 5 days after the Norren occupied Dolendun, their scouts came back from the north. Downstream, the next two bridges had been burnt too. The nearest intact crossing was some 150 miles down the river, more than halfway to Setevan itself. At the war council, Stan laid out his case. Continue to occupy the eastern shore. Send a peace treaty to Setevan requesting the return of all slaves and the immediate cessation of hostilities. Offer to remain a part of Greater Gask, with all the requisite taxes and tributes that involved, in exchange for the revocation of the king's ultimatum and for the total dissolution of Norren slavery. If King Modigan refused, let him come try to take the territories for himself. The army of clans wouldn't leave until the treaty was signed. A part of Dante knew Stan's plan was the wise course. What more could they do? March on Setevan and plague the capital with Norren dead? Leave the territories undefended to rush out and terrorize old Gask? The Empire's heartland wasn't like the sparsely peopled Norren territories or the yawning woods around Narashtovik. Even with Dolendun and Galador taken out of the equation, any of the cities of Setevan, Yalan, Vos, or Fonovan could raise 5,000 fighting men in an instant if they felt genuinely threatened. So long as the Norren stayed put on their side of the river, the king's war effort would be hobbled by the usual politicking, apathy, resentment, and costs. No peasant wanted to die fighting a race of towering giants who just wanted to be left alone. Anyway, if there was to be a clash of armies, let it come here, on their home ground, behind their own defenses. Yet another part of him thought it was a mistake. The liberation of the Norren territories must have been a shock to the king, but no step of their campaign had yet touched human lands. To talk Modigan into peace, they would first have to cast the shadow of fear on his heart. They should take the western shore, torch the palace, carve Modigan's name in 100-foot letters on a hill above Setevan, and then carve an equally large dagger above it. Instead, they were settling in to be sieged. The chieftains found a warrior whose nulla was calligraphy and began drafting their peace proposal. Dante wandered off to a deserted house and pulsed Kali through his loon. "We need more sorcerers," he said once the old man answered.
Why would you need more of those? They're such trouble. Always turning things into other things, knocking down walls when walls are sorely needed.
Because right now, our mighty troop numbers all of me. I've heard of one or two among the Norren here, but they sound like minor talents. I don't know where Hart and Sombo got to. Either they went off to rally more clans, or they're here and I've lost track of them.
Kali hummed. Are you admitting you're insufficient?
Dante rolled his eyes at the dirty wall of the silent house. Aren't we supposed to be famed for our priests who can shape the nether like Aron himself? How will it look when the ethermancers of Setevan smear us across the streets?
Bloody?
Gutty, too. I'll see if any of the council would like to volunteer, Kali said.
Then I will pull rank on the monks, because that is what rank is for. Do you think you'll be able to survive 2 more weeks without them?
If I don't, we'll know who to blame, Dante said.
You.
The chieftains sent their messenger downstream to the king. Dante spent a day walking around the city.
If a fight came, he didn't like the look of the north end of town. The south and east were far from impregnable, but there were some hills there to aid the defense, and a tightness to the streets that would squeeze enemy troops into vulnerable narrows. By contrast, the north of Dolendun was set on a flat plain. The houses were scattered and rural, the streets perversely wide. It would be no task for the Redshirts to overrun them with sheer numbers, then use the structures for cover as they advanced on the heart of the city. So, just past the last of the northern houses, he started raising ramparts of dirt. He didn't use a shovel. He used the nether, taking hold of its earth-embedded weave to drag the ground up with it. Slow work. He'd only lifted a man 6 feet high and 20 feet long before he had to lie down in the shady grass for a nap. Still, it wasn't his intention to build a wall around the city all by himself. He just wanted to see if such a thing could possibly be done. Judging by his first day of work amongst the grass and flowers and beetles and bees, the answer was no. After putting together a stretch of rampart 50 feet long but just waist high, his touch passed through the nether like water through river weeds. It stirred, swayed, and stayed put. The following day, 3 Norren emerged from the houses and stared at him for 10 minutes. He figured they were just gawkers, killing time watching the man who could move dirt by waving his hands. But an hour later they returned with shovels and picks and 10 more men. Wordless, they set in beside him, hollowing broad ditches on the exterior of the fortifications and pitching soil up the growing slopes. Dante squinted at the river and smiled. The next morning the Norren at the ditches doubled in number. By the end of a week, hundreds of men and women toiled with shovels throughout every minute of daylight, putting their restless nomad energy to work protecting the city that had become their present home. Citizens trickled in, too. Some dug. Others brought food and water for the workers. A handful sang or danced or told stories while the warriors rested in the shade. Blaze showed up of his own accord for a few hours every day before returning to Lyra and Cora. Whenever Dante walked back to the house, Cora watched him with those sparkling silver eyes. Blaze was there, in the fields, when a hunched young Norren approached Dante with his hands tucked into his sleeves. Dante straightened, letting the nether slip away, and wiped his arm across his brow. The days had turned warm.
"Excuse me," the Norren said. His beard was patchy enough he might have been a teenager. Instead of meeting Dante's eyes, the youth gazed past his shoulder.
"Yes?" Dante said.
"Is the idea here to keep the enemy out?"
"That's the general theory of fortification, yeah."
"And you're doing this with earth?"
Sure enough.
Dante gestured at the river, flowing bluely to his left. If we can, we might flood the ditches with water too.
The young man nodded and frowned at the ground, as if asked a particularly fiendish arithmetic problem.
What are your feelings on explosions?
I prefer not to be near them.
Oh.
The Noran turned to walk back to the city.
Dante jogged after him.
You can't ask a question like that and then just trot off. What brought you out here?
Well,
he folded his hands back into his sleeves and furrowed his brow, staring past Dante's shoulder again.
Explosives. I can make them.
And you think an incoming army might not appreciate being blown up?
Wait, won't they?
Dante hid his smile.
What's your name?
The boy straightened. Freed from his hunch, he was a good 4 inches taller than Dante.
Willers.
How do you set off your explosives, Willers?
Fireworks, good. Yeah, you touch the fire to the explosive, and then the explosives explode.
I'll take all you can give me.
The kid was so shocked he looked Dante straight in the eye.
Really?
It won't be too much. I have to mix a few things, and two of the things are hard to find even when you know where to look.
Whatever you can get.
Dante gestured at the half-mile-long line of raised dirt and the scores of Noran working to make it even stronger. It was a quarter of the way to the small hill. If they could reach it, the north face of the city would be sealed by the rampart.
We've got a lot of ground to cover.
Willers nodded quickly and scurried back the way he'd come, leaning forward so far into his strides it looked like he'd topple right over.
I didn't know we'd get to blow things up, Blaze said. If I had, I would have conquered a city much sooner in life.
Well, we all have regrets, Dante said.
At least we're here now, and have the prospect of blowing things up in the future. I feel like that's what's truly important.
Around them, warriors dug on. Messages came and went from Kali and the scouts, but from the only one that mattered, the message to the king, there was no word. Day to day, Dante's movement of the earth felt no different from the one before, but after a week, he could pile up dirt or sweep it down without conscious thought. He was stronger, too, able to add 100 yards to the ditches and ramparts each day before the Nether grew fluttery and weak. 2 weeks to the day, the messenger returned. Most of him, anyway. All his possessions had been confiscated. He'd been forced to walk naked for miles from Setevan before a farmer, finding he had no clothes that would come close to fitting, offered the Noran a long cloak. His right hand had been confiscated, too, the hand that had delivered the treaty. He had another message, too. The armies of Gask had finally mustered. They would begin their march to Dolendon in days.
Chapter 23.
Well, that's a relief, Blaze said, wandering away from the plaza where the announcement had been made.
Dante goggled.
It's a relief that we're days from being attacked by thousands of people with bows and swords and devices that can crush us with rocks.
It beats digging ditches all day.
Yes, and now we can use those ditches for our own graves.
Blaze gave him a skeptical look.
It's a relief to know that whatever's happening, it's probably not going to continue happening for much longer. Either we'll use the streets to bleed to death in, or to dance down with funny little hats on our heads.
I'm tired of waiting to see what they'll do next. Well, pretty quick I won't have to.
That is sort of comforting, Dante said, in a very horrifying way.
See, it's all about perspective.
You'd be lost without me.
Within hours, Norran citizens began filing into the camps to enlist in the makeshift army. It became quickly apparent that there wouldn't be enough proper weapons to go around. Smiths took to forges and banged on metal. Fletchers sent their clansmen out to gather wood and feathers while they carved fresh shafts. Others found flaky stones and sat in circles, swapping stories while they chipped the rocks into points for arrows and spears. The clan of Dreaming Bears proposed a raid on one of the barracks across the river. They planned to send scouts that night to find where the Red Shirt's arms might be cached. Dante returned to the rampart on the north end of town. It was nearly complete, its line extending from the river to within a bow shot of the small hill that would help command their flank. He'd been hoping to curve the line of dirt south around the hinge of the hill and cut off the eastern approach to the city as well. He doubted he'd have time. He'd have to string up whatever ramparts he could between other hills and buildings, doing his best to funnel the invaders down a couple of streets where the bulk of the Norran could stand firm. Willers came to him that afternoon with a cotton bag the size of Dante's fist. It was unnaturally heavy and shifted like sand. It smelled sulphurous, hellish, like something dredged up from a lake inside a steaming cave. "What's it made of?" Dante said. Willers blinked past his shoulder.
"Materials?"
"That's only you know about."
"No, lots of people know about them. It's how they're put together that they don't know."
Dante hefted the lumpy bag. "How big a burst will this produce?"
"If you are within 5 feet of it, it will quickly spread you across many more feet. If you are within 20, you might fall down or be upset with your ears for refusing to stop ringing."
Dante walked across the grass to a stop some 40 feet away, set down the bag on the top of a small mound of dirt, and walked back to Willers, who was staring at the bag with horrified anticipation, as if it were a puppy about to piddle on his neighbor's rug. Dante set the nether to it in a flash of heat. A white flash seared his eyes. As the heat touched his skin, thunder rolled across the plain and smacked him deep in the chest. He blinked away the stars. A claw of black smoke rose from the scorched dirt.
"How did you make it burst without touching it with fire?" Willow said.
"I've got tricks too." Dante rubbed his ear. He could smell the smoke now, ashy and acrid. "It won't stop them altogether, but it may give them something to cry about."
"If they're sad, will they go home?"
"Who knows?" He looned Callie to ask for all the soldiers Narashtovic could put together. Callie said he'd see what he could do. He did not sound optimistic. Neither was Dante. For all their tricks and troops, it would still be a numbers game. And the numbers favored the king. What happened if the Norran were defeated here? There were still many clans scattered throughout the territories, but not all that many. Too few to resist if the Redshirts broke through. Once they were quelled, he had the sick feeling the king would turn his armies to the north, to Narashtovic. Cassander would see to that. Their meddling would not go unpunished. His expression must have been dark enough to chill the dead. As he sat in a chair in the front room of the abandoned house, Cora wandered from her room and fixed him with her shining eyes.
"What's wrong?" she said.
He glanced up sharply. So shocked to hear her speak, he nearly forgot what he'd been brooding on. "It's nothing."
"This is nothing."
She swiped her hand through the air, fingers trailing, then pointed at his head.
"That is something."
"Do you really want to talk about the war?"
"Why are you afraid? I saw the soldiers in that house."
Dante managed to smile and frown at the same time. 4 soldiers is one thing, but there's an army on its way. No man can reverse the tide by himself. She folded her hands at her waist.
So why don't you run away?
I can't. This is my fault, and the fault of hundreds of others dating back to the day the first human took a Norrin for a slave. So maybe I'm blameless, reacting to the mistakes of long-dead men, trying to set right what was said wrong. He leaned forward, elbows on his knees, and stared at the dirty wooden floor. But I don't think there would have been a war right now if we hadn't been tempting one. For that I do share blame.
I wonder if it would have been better to leave the Norrin alone to suffer the lesser burden of bondage.
Soon enough, win or lose, thousands of them will die.
But what if the lives of their children are better for years and years and years?
I doubt I'll be alive to see that. Cora clutched her arms to her ribs.
Why wouldn't you leave to live upon a mountain, where no one can hurt you, and you'll never know about anything that's wrong?
He glanced up. Her eyes were the brightest yet, burning from the hollows of her cheeks. He took a breath. You know that painting your grandpa made you? He had to finish it with his left hand. She cocked her head. Why would he do that? He always painted with his right.
Because someone destroyed his right hand. For fighting back.
But he finished the painting. It was the last thing he did before he died.
He painted me.
Dante nodded.
You're his granddaughter. You've got his blood. Even if they ruin your hand, you can finish your painting.
She blinked several times, face pinched together by an invisible hand of emotion.
Thank you for telling me that. About Grandpa.
Dante nodded. That, too, might have been a mistake, telling her. At times it would haunt her, knowing her grandpa's dying moments were spent slumped over her picture. But she needed it, a knowledge of defiance, that until the day you met Aron in that starry field, no matter what arose against you, you could stand and stare it in the eye.
Perhaps he'd needed to hear that too.
He continued his work with the Norrin on the ramparts. The clan of Dreaming Bears sailed across the river and sacked a lightly guarded barracks, bringing home barrels of swords and spears. The citizens drilled in the squares. Steel flashed in sunlight. Stone points clacked against the cobbles. Arrows thrummed, smacking into bales of hay. Men and women hauled water from wells and the river. Through the loons, the scattered scouts let them know the king's army had left Setevan, 8,000 strong at the least. More would join as the army crossed the miles between the capital and Dolendun. A contingent arrived from Narashtivik 2 days later. Three of the council's priests, quiet Varla, brusque and vulgar Yulov, and dark-haired and cunning young Wint, along with 10 monks of lesser talents, including Nak. Dante met them with a smile. Even Wint. It was good to see old faces. They would help greatly, too. The least of the monks was worth any 10 soldiers. Together with Dante and the 2 Norrin adepts, it would make for a troublesome force.
How did you get reined into this?
He asked Nak.
Nak puffed his cheeks in embarrassment.
I volunteered.
Why the hell would you do that?
So that when you triumph, I can boast to the ladies I taught you everything you know.
You're not much of a monk, are you? Nak's plump cheeks bulged in a frown.
If a monk can end lives in the name of his god, he ought to be able to create lives, too.
Dante showed them around, introduced them to Morn and Hop, and a few of the other chiefs.
When Dante explained he'd joined Hop's clan, the priests gave him curious looks, but raised no questions about what that meant for his loyalties to Narashtovic. The incoming army was covering nearly 20 miles per day. By the time it ranged within 100 miles, Norren scouts estimated it had gathered another 1,000 men. On the evening it camped, some 40 miles from Dolendon, the boats arrived. The oars of 15 war galleys lashed from water, plying upstream to dock on the west bank. Glaze watched with Dante from their own piers. "I don't think they're bringing more troops," Blaze said. "I think they're here to ferry the Redshirts and Dolendon over to our side of the river." Dante peered through the twilight. "What makes you think that?" "You know how bad those boats stink. But have we seen a single soldier hop off since they've docked?" "Makes sense. Use their fleet to divert us to the shores while their main army marches in from the north." "Those things move like ducks on the water," Blaze grumbled in grudging admiration. "Big, stupid ducks filled with hundreds of people who want us dead." "That isn't a very duck-like want," Dante said. "So why are they always honking at people? Does that sound like something that wants to be friends?" "I once spent several days thinking about ducks." "What would possibly possess you to do that?" Blaze said. "Callie." "Oh." "Yeah." "Wait," Blaze said. "Hey. Wait. Then you must know the thing it is that ducks do best."
"Quack."
"Sit." A grin spread over Blaze's face, unstoppable as a blush. "They sit there. Like feathery, bug-eating idiots." Dante drew back his chin.
"You've got an idea."
"I've got an idea."
It was foolish and wonderful and perfectly Blaze. Best of all, it would work. As night fell, Dante burst into laughter, his giggles rippling over the water. He told Blaze to tell Hop to get to work on fortifying the shore, then ran north to get to work himself, the torchstone lighting his way. The next day passed with terrifying swiftness. He obsessed about hours. Each hour meant a mile. 1 mile closer for the king's army to approach. Of course, it didn't quite work like that. Some hours the army would be stopped to rest. Other hours they would march and march, covering 2 or 3 miles every 60 minutes. But in the aggregate, for each hour the army existed, it would cover the better part of a mile. It had been 40 miles away whenever it set out that morning. It could cross that distance in 2 days. 48 hours. He had 48 hours left. Not that he was certain he would die in the fighting, but in the normal course of life, you wake in the morning with the expectation you will continue to live for years. Or even decades. For tens of thousands of hours. Hours too many to mark or measure or care. In fact, there was no conscious expectation of decades of life at all, just an unconscious assumption running so deep you never thought of it at all. Dante could count 48 hours. After that, he might have no more hours, or a single one spent in battle. Or 40,000 until he died in bed with a smile embedded in his long white beard. He didn't know. He didn't know, and he couldn't know. And so his heart beat, as if it were trying to work a lifetime of beats into the few hours he had left. The Norren finished connecting the rampart to the northern hill. A couple inches of groundwater had seeped up through the ditch below the earthwork's outward slopes. Dante strode to the river, where a small dam of land held the waters from the ditch, and took hold of the nether lurking beneath the dark soil. He slid the damming earth up onto the rampart. Cold, brown water sluiced into the ditch, flooding it to a depth of 3 feet. They sent away those unable or unwilling to fight, the children, the elderly, the crippled,
those whose beliefs forbade the shedding of blood. Most of the women stayed to fight. They sent Cora away, too, her painting in one hand, one of Blaze's knives in the other. She didn't wave, just watched Dante from over her shoulder as she walked down the road southward from the city. 24 hours. 20 miles. Both went by in a blink. The scouts confirmed the red shirts' movements. In all likelihood, they would cross the remaining few miles in the day, camp nearby for the night, and attack with the dawn. Clan warriors drilled civilians in advances and retreats. Others helped erect barriers of wooden pikes across the main roads and dumped debris across others. The chiefs finalized their strategy, assuming the main body of the king's forces would come down through the north on their side of the river, while the troops quartered on the western shores landed via boat to attack from the flank or rear. The Noren forces would be divided similarly, most deployed to the northern edge of the city to man the ramparts or shadow the army south if it tried to swing around on them, while a smaller force would be left near the shore to fend off the amphibious assault. In true Noren fashion, several clans would be dispatched to roam the streets, killing any scouts, delaying expeditionary forces, and keeping watch for any major flanking movements. Dante and Blaze would be posted on the shore to oversee Blaze's plan. 600 Noren would be with them, including their clan and the Nine Pines. They might be outnumbered twofold or more. Then again, so would their main troop. He didn't touch the Nether that day. Typically, a few hours of sleep would refresh him, but he wasn't certain he would sleep at all that night. As twilight fell, the smoke of scores of fires rose from the forest north of town. Dante watched from the docks. The last grey light flickered on the water. Blaze and Lyra were a ways up the shore. Blaze stood behind her, arms around her waist. They didn't appear to be talking, just watching the smoke bloom and the light fade. As the night took hold, firelight shined through the black pines. Waves sloshed against the docks. Dante's loon pulsed, startling him.
"How does it look?" Callie said.
"Like we're in line for morning introductions."
"How do you think you'll do?"
"Oh, I expect I'll kill at least 20 people personally. We'll see where it goes from there."
"I meant as a whole, you dolt," Callie said.
"Well, we're outnumbered. By a lot. Then again, I would bet on a Noren clan warrior over a red shirt grunt 10 times out of 10. Then again, the Noren aren't used to fighting in groups of this size, and many of them have never fought before."
"Well, I sent 500 men your way earlier in the week. I'm sorry I couldn't get them to you sooner. But if you can hold out for a few days, they may arrive in time to help."
"Good." Dante shook his head.
"You know what?
I have no idea how it'll go tomorrow. Put me in a room with 4 men with swords, and unless I trip and break my head, I can tell you what's going to happen. 15,000 armed men shaking their spears at each other across one of the biggest cities in Garsk, riverborne invasions, sorcerers on both sides. I don't have a clue, Kelly. Not the skinniest, most malnourished, runtiest little clue. This time tomorrow, I could be recounting you our great victory, or I could be telling you nothing at all because I am at the bottom of a mountain of bodies."
"What if this is the last time we ever speak?"
"I think you should calm down."
"Should I?
How often have you stared across the night at 1,000 enemy campfires?"
"Just once," Callie said.
"When?"
Dante scoffed. "During the third scour."
Dante was about to declare him a liar. The third scour had taken place over a century ago. He remembered with the usual jolt, Callie was well older than that.
"What happened?"
"As it turns out, I lived."
"In the battle?"
"It was in the Colin Basin, just after we took the palace."
Callie cleared his throat.
"If you're any student of history, then, which I know you're not,
I know about the Battle of Colin Basin.
Then why am I telling you this? We had the palace for 2 weeks before the Baron's reinforcements returned. A true rabble. Disgusting. But they had fine steel, while we had pitchforks and dysentery. What kind of a universe is this, where a case of diarrhea isn't charged of deciding who's right and wrong? The gods are laughing, I say. Regardless of our gastrointestinal distress, we dug in while they advanced. I remember thinking we had better than half a chance, that the enemy were primarily conscripts out of Larkwood, who didn't give a damn about the basin. That and the mercenaries, also from Larkwood, who'd been mere bandits until their silver started flowing from the Baron, rather than from whoever they could rob. Meanwhile, I was right around your age, however old you are now, except significantly more advanced.
Dante snorted. I highly doubt it.
My attitude exactly. So you can understand why I was less worried than I perhaps ought to have been.
They simply had too many men, you see. That's what it came down to.
That and the dysentery. We stuffed the buildings around the palace plaza with archers, and gummed up all the doorways in with tables and garbage and the like, but the enemy lit fires. And what do you know? Archers don't like breathing smoke and flame any more than the rest of us. They pushed us back inside the palace, then smashed out those great red windows. Have you seen them?
No, of course not. They were smashed, and poured inside.
We fought in the halls until you could hardly stand from the blood. Things got so desperate, a group of us decided to lock ourselves in the old-fashioned dungeon cells and shoot anybody who got near the bars. Which doesn't make a lot of sense in hindsight, but as I said, desperate.
What happened then? Dante said.
Oh, we couldn't find the keys, so we ran away instead.
If I've got this right, then, what you're saying is just when things look the darkest, I should run away as fast as I can.
What I'm saying is, I was certain I would die, but then I lived for another 100 years. Most of them happy.
Callie stopped. Through the loon, Dante heard him swallow some water or tea.
Look. Right now you don't know how the next day will turn out. Yet you fear the worst, even though you can't possibly know it'll come. How can these things coexist? You don't know what tomorrow will bring. You might win. You might lose. You might win and die, or lose and live. In the end, a single thing among all these possibilities will be the one thing that happens. And you won't know what it'll be until it does. Probably not even then. Discovering these unknowns, these possibilities, that should be a joy. Whatever happens, you'll get the gift of knowing what.
It sounded like nonsense. Yet Dante found himself comforted. He wanted to tell Callie as much, but something held him back. An emotion oddly like resentment. Instead, he gazed at the black water, the campfires burning through the forest.
Thanks, I think. Well, if it gets that bad, you can always run.
He closed the connection. Dante wandered up the shore, smelling mud and fish that had been dead for so long they barely stunk. If he had thoughts, he didn't remember them afterwards. Just the memory of the cool evening and the wash of waves upon the shore. It calmed him. He wanted it to be this way forever.
Blaze found him there a couple hours later. The blonde man grinned.
Figured you'd be here. When it comes to water, you're like something that loves it.
Where's Lyra?
Bed. In no condition to walk.
Don't say anything more, or this night will come to blows.
Oh, it already... Dante pushed his tented palms against his nose. Forget it, I'm just going to go challenge the entire enemy myself.
Blaze laughed.
Listen, whatever happens tomorrow, the first bit's going to be fun.
I'm sure it will provide fond memories as I'm gargling my own blood. I think we're doing the right thing, you know.
Do you?
I haven't taken a census, but I'm going to go out on a limb and predict that 100% of the Norren slaves would prefer to be not slaves.
The issue, Dante said, is whether they would prefer to be living slaves or dead not slaves, and whether it's any of our business to intervene.
Well, we did.
Oops.
Dante laughed through his nose.
Then it overtook him. Rib-hitching laughter that had him shaking his head at the river.
Oops.
We should probably put that on our tombstones.
That or it seemed like a good idea at the time.
Blaze grinned.
I'm going to put an arrow on mine pointing to yours and then make mine say, all his fault.
Oops.
They laughed until silence took them. The hush of night, the whisper of waves.
Anyway, Blaze said at last, if I only have one more night of sleep ahead of me, I'd like it to be a good one.
See you on the front lines, Dante said.
Dante waited just a little longer before going back to the house. One last look at the moon. The stars. The silvery heavens and their cycle of perfection. He should have looked sooner. Looked longer. There was no more time left.
He slept. He meant to see the sunrise, too, but he woke to the full light of early morning and the blare of war horns. It was time.
Chapter 24 Blaze burst through the door before the horns faded.
Well, come on! You wouldn't want to miss the big war, would you?
Part of his mind leapt to awareness, as if it had been waiting all night for this moment. His body was still clumsy with sleep. As he tugged on his pants, he toppled back into the mattress. He had little armor to don, iron bracelets for both wrists, with a slightly larger pair clasped above each elbow, a leather vest composed of boiled patches sewn into supple deerskin, keeping him flexible across the hips and abdomen, along with a collar of similar construction. That was it. The rest was sheer decoration, the armor of the Psyche, his black cloak silver-trimmed, the brooch of Bardon clasping it together, and his doublet, velvety black, the thick silver ring of Aron's millstone sewn into the center of the chest. He was ready. The morning was already warm, thick with the moisture of the river and the forest. The barricades around the main plaza were manned by a skeletal defense. The footprints of thousands of Norren soldiers led north to the ramparts. Dante jogged west to the shore, where hundreds of clan warriors and Dolendon citizens sorted through the arrows, wiped down the swords, and stretched their limbs, working up a light sweat. Hot tea awaited Dante on the docks. One of the perks of rank.
They started loading up around dawn. Blaze nodded across the river.
On the far bank, the galleys waited beside the deep water docks. Dante sipped his tea.
And how's our fleet doing, Admiral?
See for yourself. Blaze swept his hand upstream. There, some 20 rowboats bobbed beside the pier, occupied by 2-man teams of Norren. 3 little candles burned in the bow of each boat. As he watched, the first boat cast off its line and pushed into the river.
Excellent!
Wint appeared beside him. The young council priest's dark brows were pinched in a skeptical line.
Do you really expect this to work?
Define work, Dante said. Provide any positive impact whatsoever on our chances of success? Are you hoping their captains will laugh themselves over the railings?
Beside Blaze, Lyra stared Wint down.
These two have made a living out of appearing so foolish that no one takes them seriously until it's too late.
Wint shrugged, his expression taking a humorous edge.
Forgive me for being concerned about my fate when that fate rests on the outcome of a smattering of rowboats versus a fleet of fully staffed war galleys.
Yes, well, you're forgetting something, Blaze said.
Enlighten me. Those aren't rowboats.